Oh, I love that sound. Do you love that sound? You know, here we are so lucky here in Wisconsin. We have, what, 15,000 or so inland lakes, and we are very fortunate to be bordering two of our great lakes, two of the great lakes of North America. If you look at, they span about 750 miles from east to west, and they form the largest freshwater system in the world. Think about it. It's mind-blowing, the natural resource that we have on our borders. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. We're going to be talking about the Great Lakes today with our guests from the Wisconsin Sea Grant Institute. And it's a Sea Grant Institute. I've worked on and off with the Sea Grant for a long time. Some people say, well, why the heck do we have a Sea Grant? But you know what? Here in we have a lot of water along our borders. So why not on the UW-Madison campus? And why not then have Ann Mosier come and join us? She's a senior special librarian. She's managed Wisconsin's water library for the past decade or so. She loves educational outreach with young kids, gives lessons on aquatic topics, and answers fascinating reference questions about water. And before that, she spent about 20 years as an environmental librarian. She also earned a master's degree in library and information systems from UW-Madison. Ann, welcome.
Thank you, Larry. Thank you.
Great to have you here, and also great to have with us Titus. Is it Seilheimer or Seilheimer?
Seilheimer.
Seilheimer. Okay. He is a fisheries outreach specialist. He's based in the Institute's Manitowoc office on the UW Green Bay Manitowoc campus. He holds a doctorate in biology from McAllister University in Ontario, where he studied fish habitat in Great Lakes coastal wetlands. Before he came to the Sea Grant Institute, he was a research ecologist for the U.S. Forest Service in St. Paul, developing water quality models for the Western Great Lakes. And so great to have him with us as well, and great to have you listening in. We're going to learn a lot about the Great Lakes today, and I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You have a special story about the Great Lakes, a question about it, what's been your experience? I've got so many wonderful experiences along both Lake Michigan and Lake Superior, where that's where I've spent most of my time when I'm thinking of the Great Lakes. What about you? What's been your experience? Again, the number is 1-800-642-1234. Send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. And Anne, give us a little history. You know, you're a librarian. Let's go back. Let's go way back and remind us how the Great Lakes were formed.
Yeah, so the story of the Great Lakes is thousands and thousands of years old. You might not recall, but it was covered with an ice sheet. Pretty much all of Canada covered the northern part of North America, including Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, all the way actually eastward to Nova Scotia. And as those that ice sheet, the Laurentide ice sheet, receded, we were left with these beautiful Great Lakes. So I think about 3,000 or 4,000 years ago was when we have the shape that we have today.
Yeah, and then so it's been that way for, the shape mm-hmm. hasn't changed very much at all, has it?
Mm. Yeah, sort of, you know, in recent years, it's been, you know, the Great Lakes that we see on the maps have been, you know, kind of how they are. But, you know, over time, the water levels have fluctuated as much as, you know, tens to hundreds of feet. So definitely when the water is really low, it's been a different shape. And different places with ridges up in Bailey's Harbor. The dune and swale complexes near where I'm at in Manitowoc, you know, those are evidence of the past water levels. So, you know, much higher, much lower, and different shapes of those.
And even as the times, for the length of time I've been on the show mm-hmm. and doing this program, I can remember times when we were talking about, oh, the water levels are way mm-hmm. high, and then 5 years later, the water levels are way too low. So it'll vary quite a bit, even in a 30-year period, say.
Yep.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. But if you think about the amount of water, who is it? Kate says there are 6 quadrillion gallons of water in the Great Lakes. That is impossible to even think about, almost.
Yeah, it's really true. I do a lot of programs with kids, and you know, kind of getting them to get a concept of what that means is pretty challenging. You know, I'm kind of an old school librarian. I still like some of the old tools. I often bring, you know, a globe with me when I do Great Lakes Science outreach. And, you know, the globe is a really good visual for kids to see all of the water on the earth. And we, you know, we always locate this basin, the Great Lakes Basin. And, you know, kids will often be a little underwhelmed by the size of it. And, you know, and then I kind of point out, well, you guys are all about, you know, 4 or 5 feet tall. You know, think about if we pulled the plug on that and the Great Lakes water was just let all over the continental U.S., you'd be under 9 feet of water. And so then the kids kind of, you know, that's pretty amazing. That I can kind of visualize.
And it's to me, it's amazing that, what is it, 20% of the fresh water supply in the world?
Yeah. Yep, a little over 20% surface fresh water. Mm-hmm. It's a huge number.
So as we look at, you know, we were talking about the changes in depth and so forth. Mm-hmm. What causes the water levels of the Great Lakes to change so much? Titus, you want to?
Yeah, I can talk about that a bit. I mean, it's really water in and water out, and so it's really a question of precipitation and runoff from the rivers, precipitation over the lakes as well, and that's sort of the inputs, and then balancing that with the outputs, so the water flowing out of each lake, the amount of evaporation that's happening as well, and so it's that balance. You know, if you have more water leaving, the water levels will go down. And if you have more water coming in, and that's kind of what we've seen in the last few years, is an increase in water levels, especially in Lake Michigan, because we had more water entering than leaving.
Yeah. You know, you wonder a little bit about the levels over time with perhaps changes in climate. If it's warmer, you got less ice. On the lakes, you have more opportunity for maybe evaporation. I am definitely not a scientist, but I'm thinking about this a little bit. Does that make sense? Is there, or not?
Yeah, I mean, those are definitely important parts of that. You know, the ice cover, more ice cover means less evaporation. And then there's also kind of a longer term, you know, if you have a really cold winter, lots of ice cover, that actually will carry over into the next year, because then your water temperature the following year is going to be cooler. And so it's actually, you know, it's very, very complex, and can be, you know, certainly there's scientists, that's their whole career is just looking at water levels.
Well, let's talk about the Wisconsin Water Library a little bit more here.
Sure.
Anne. So, well, first, what resources do you house there,
so,
other than that globe?
Yeah, we have a globe, and I mean, actually, we have a 7-foot by 10-foot Great Lakes Basin map too. So we're into the maps. But so the Water Library, the Wisconsin Water Library, is an academic library here at UW-Madison. So we support the mission of the university, the information needs of faculty, staff, and students. But the library has an outreach mission. So I get to take the show on the road, as it were. I do programs around the state related to water and Great Lakes science. So yesterday I was in Beaver Dam at their public library doing a program on Great Lakes fish. You know, my sweet spot, the age that I love working with, are the 3 to 9-year-olds. And I generally go out to informal places like public libraries or community centers, Head Start programs. So my job is to introduce science to children at an early age, the earliest learner. So I take things that, you know, Titus might be working on in terms of fisheries, and I adapt it for that age group. And the collection that I have supports that mission. So we have lots of technical reports and scientific historical records. But we also have books. I have about 1,000 children's books. I have videos. And everything in the library library that I have is available for loan. Anyone in Wisconsin can borrow materials from our library. And in Wisconsin, we have the Library Delivery Network, and that gets books out free of charge to any patron in Bayfield or Oconto. We have this really beautiful collection of materials that are available to everyone.
Do you have one that's a favorite, or what's the most coveted holding?
Oh, that's like picking your favorite child, Larry. When you ask a librarian that's a tough question. This year has been the year of the Go Big Read for Madison in the Dane County area, so we've been thinking a lot about Dan Egan's book. So right now that's a bit of a favorite, but we have pretty much books on every topic, and so I don't know, I can name my favorite child today.
Well, Dan Egan's a pretty good guy. Yeah. I've had a chance to visit with him, actually with his daughter too, and they're really,
really
nice people.
Family.
And I really want to talk perhaps a little bit more about what he had to say in his book. Mm-hmm. And I know that you've certainly up to date on what was in that book and maybe how it how it might relate to or verify or certify the kinds of things that you're talking about as well. And I haven't given the number, and here we are. We have to take a little break for the news. Ann Mosier is Senior Special Librarian managing the Wisconsin Water Library based on the UW-Madison campus. Titus Seilheimer is Fisheries Outreach Specialist based in Manitowoc. I'm going to ask him when the world record muskie is going to come out of Lake Michigan. I'd like to be the one pulling it in, but we'll talk about fish a little
explore
bit too. But
we will be and animal communities.
We'll be back
and learn how
after
they prepare
the news.
For winter.
We are talking about the five Great Lakes today. Can you name all the five lakes? I bet you can if you. You know, if you think back to school, I remember we had an acronym HOME that we used to learn the Great Lakes. So Huron, Ontario, Michigan, Erie, and Superior are the five, and they are an impressive bunch. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. They make up the world's largest freshwater system. About 40 million people live near their shores. Many more of us depend on them for fresh drinking water and livelihoods. So we're learning all about them with the Wisconsin Sea Grant Institute today with Ann Mosier, one of our guests, Senior Special Librarian managing the Wisconsin Water Library. It's a cool place. She's based on the UW-Madison campus. Titus Seilheimer is a Fisheries Outreach Specialist based in Manitowoc, and certainly it's going to be fun talking with them, but we'd also want to hear from you. What do you want to understand about this precious freshwater resource? Have you seen changes over the many years that you might want to talk about? I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And, you know, one of the things that Dan Egan talked about was some of the threats. Although he's an optimistic guy. He really is an optimistic guy in a lot of ways. But if you're looking, Titus, at what's the biggest threat out there for the Great Lakes right now, what would it be?
Oh, yeah. I think, there are a lot of threats. It's not all bad news, but I think it's some of the food web changes, mostly from invasive species, that have really changed the ecosystem and the ecology of the lakes, and that's really a challenge to deal with.
That quagga mussel.
Yep, quagga mussels.
Quagga mussels, yeah, they are replacing the zebra mussel almost, aren't they?
Yeah, so zebra mussels came in the sort of the mid-80s, and quagga mussels, which are very closely related, they're sort of cousins to the zebra mussel, came in about 10 years later and have really, where seabird mussels were, you know, sort of limited in depth, and they couldn't go to the deeper parts of the lakes like Lake Michigan. Quagga mussels have been able to do that. And so really the bottom of Lake Michigan is quagga mussels. And that has really changed how much algae is out there, which is food for the zooplankton, food for the little fish, food for the big fish.
Yeah, it's a quite a change. Well, let's go to Susan in Milwaukee, who has something for us. Hi, Susan.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. I would like to know about my favorite prehistoric fish, the sturgeons, and see how they're doing with these invasive species. And I'll take my answer off the phone.
All right, Titus?
Yeah, sturgeon. You know, sturgeon have, you know, historically had much higher populations in the past, but lots of efforts going on to help the Great Lakes sturgeon. Lake Superior seeing some pretty positive signs, increasing numbers, reproduction is happening, they're spawning, creating little fish to swim out in the lake, and lots of efforts elsewhere to grow sturgeon, plant them into the lakes, and you know, hopefully see those fish again in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. Larry in Reedsburg, your turn. Hi, Larry.
Well, thank you for taking my call, and thank your guest.
Sure.
I have just a myriad of things to say. Having a large fishing boat up at Green Bay, and north of Green Bay in Oconto, the water has got better, clearer over the years. That's not the problem. The problem is, well, my estimation, what I've seen, and forgive me if I get some of the facts, you know, not the right term, but just last week I watched a long program on TV, I don't know what channel it was, about the Illinois River and the carp going up it, and that the electrical system they have now to supposedly stop them just plain does not work right behind barges or boats, and it's just a matter of time. The fishery specialist that they were talking to on this canal, the Illinois River, said the only way to stop them is shut that thing down. 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, there's a 100,000-gallon manure spill up going into the waters of not Green Bay directly, but sturgeon waters for sure, Lake Winnebago system. Kewaunee County water, I don't know how many houses can't drink their water up there. The large animal outfits, I drove by a field the other day, had 4 inches of sprayed manure within 25 feet of a little creek that goes into a larger creek that goes into the Baraboo River.
Yeah.
The U.S. the water, whatever they call it, you know, the Clean Water Act people from the federal government said Wisconsin was incapable, incompetent of taking care of their own water.
Well, let's get a comment from, thanks a lot for calling, by the way, Larry. So Larry raises a bunch of issues here. Titus, I think I'll turn to you for them. He talked about carp and manure spills. Let's take those two, but
sure,
totally different things. But
yeah, you know, I think the Asian carp is definitely a concern to a lot of people in the Great Lakes. You know, that they do have the potential to really further change the food webs out there. And I don't know if I would characterize the electrical barriers as not working at all. There's certainly some issues. You know, at least some of the evidence has shown most of the invasion front for those Asian carp is still downstream of that barrier. So I think we oftentimes think of it as sort of a wall that's in the water and the carp are running into it already, but they're still downstream. But, you know, certainly a very concerning area.
And there's groups that are looking at this at the federal and state levels.
Definitely. Lots of collaboration and cooperation going on, you know, dealing with the issue in Illinois, but, yeah, across the Great Lakes.
What about this whole business of pollution? When Larry talked about the manure spill, which of course nobody wants, but
right. I mean, water quality is still an issue. You know, we have kind of it's a complicated situation where we have very low nutrients in the middle of the lakes, but we still have quite a bit of runoff and higher nutrient levels coming in the rivers and streams, and you know, that is kind of a challenge because we need more of it in the middle, but and a lot of that is driven by the zebra and quagga mussels kind of pulling that out of the water column. Near shore, there's still quite a bit of nutrients, and that can create the cladophora problems, which is a benthic algae washes up on the beach,
yeah.
Kind of ruins your day at the beach when you've got this rotting mat of algae there. So
there we go, Larry. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Connie in Portage, your turn.
Hi, Larry. I'd like to know if you have to have permission from every state that surrounds the Great Lakes before large amounts of water can be taken out of there for different companies or for different states.
Okay, there is an organization that oversees that.
The Great Lakes Water Compact.
Yeah, so the compact was signed by all of the governors around the Great Lakes region, passed by Congress, and so all of them have agreed that any drawdown for drinking water purposes from a municipality have to be agreed upon by all of the governors.
Canada's in that too, isn't it?
Yeah, do you know?
The Canadian side, it's a little more advisory.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's really about keeping, you know, the compact really is for withdrawals from outside of the watershed, mm-hmm. and that's been with us. Waukesha was a really big issue with the compact, and Peter Annan, actually, who he wrote a book, Great Lakes Water Wars, that really covers the issue very well.
But there is a compact that oversees that.
Yes, and there are rules. You know, mm-hmm. I think around the lakes there are different limits and you know, different thresholds on water withdrawals.
So there you go, Connie. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in too, by the way. I'll give you the number again. It's 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org. We'd love to hear from you. And Eugene in Sturgeon Bay, we go to you. Hi, Gene.
Hi. I learned many, many years ago in college that the depth of the Hudson Bay is actually getting shallower, but from the bottom. When it was compressed by glaciers, the land was compressed, and then the land has started to come back up, but of course it's only a rate of like an inch every 100 years. I was wondering if the Great Lakes were in that same phenomenon was occurring because they were also covered by the glaciers.
Interesting. Titus?
Yeah, you know, that is, we see that with, especially on the northern end of Lake Superior, there is that glacial rebound. So, you know, think of these 2 miles of ice that's really heavy, compressed so the crust of the earth is sort of floating on magma, and so that ice compressed that down, lowered it, and you know that is still rebounding today. And so northern, particularly to the north and sort of north shore of Lake Superior, I think a similar rate, about an inch every 100 years, so not a huge amount, but you know, still happening. And so really that glaciers still, you know, we're still feeling the effects of the glaciers.
Glacial rebound. I don't think I've ever talked about that on the show before. Maybe I haven't. I've forgotten. but I mean, how much pressure, how pressed down was that soil? Do we have any idea? I mean, initially, I'm wondering is, are we going to get 10 feet of glacial rebound here or eventually or?
Oh yeah, I that's a good question. I'm not sure what the magnitude of this would be over time. You know, but that's, you know, that's hundreds of years in the future. So I'm not going to worry about it.
We won't be around to worry about it, I guess. But that's an interesting question. Thanks, Eugene. I appreciate your call. We have Kevin in Algoma with something for us. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, good morning, guys. And Titus, how are you?
Very good.
All right. Hey, a couple comments. I live in Kewaunee County, which the previous caller had mentioned. There's such a perception that Kewaunee County has poor drinking water. And I really want to get that out of the way, that that is not true. They're outside of two very small townships where that have very shallow soil to the bedrock. That's more than half of those wells tested have been above average in the nitrates and so forth. Statewide in Wisconsin, about one out of every four wells is too high in nitrates at some point of the year. That is about the Kewaunee County average when you take out those two townships. I live in Anapee Township near Algoma. I've had my well tested three times. Terrific water. And that's one comment on the water. Second, and that's not to diminish those who have problems. I mean, it's a horrible problem for the guys that have the troubles. But yeah, Overall, the county is fine. As far as the fishing, I listened to Dan Egan's program last week, and Dan is super knowledgeable and a great guy and a great reporter. But, you know, for 15 years, he's been writing about the doom and gloom of the Great Lakes and Lake Michigan fisheries going to heck. And for those people who aren't familiar, the fishery is phenomenal yet. I run the largest salmon contest in the Great Lakes in summer. We have 3,000 entrants in a 9-day tournament. Our winners are over 30 pounds every year, and we have hundreds of 20-pound-plus Chinooks. There's still great salmon and trout fishing in Algoma and up and down the lakeshore. Milwaukee leads the state in brown trout fishing, Racine and Kenosha and cohos. I mean, there's just great fishing up and down the Great Lakes. And I just want to get that word out there so people think that the lake is dead. Not even close. It's a terrific fishery out there.
I was thinking about your contest. I had a 24-pound Chinook that I was able to. Of course, you're not going to win anything at 24 pounds, but thank you very much. Comment, Titus?
Yeah, you know, it, good points there. You know, definitely a very active recreational and charter fishing in Lake Michigan and in the other lakes. A really, really important part of our local economies and, you know, a big draw. And I you know, we talk about the challenges and some of the concerns a lot, but, you know, certainly still fish out there to be caught.
Oh, lots of them. And Mike in Madison, your turn. Hi, Mike.
Yeah, thank you for taking the call. I've got a question related to whether are the Great Lakes, in particular Lake Michigan and Superior, affected at all by the height of the ocean, the Atlantic Ocean, its chemistry or its temperature, or for that matter, the other lakes?
Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah, I'd say, you know, pretty at a very kind of global scale, you know, certainly the oceans influence a lot of our weather and our climate here in the middle of the continent, but not a lot of sort of direct impacts from the Atlantic or from the Pacific. But, you know, really these kind of large scale, you know, every time some of these tropical storms come up through the Gulf, and, you know, that might mean inches of rain up here in Wisconsin. So that's maybe indirectly influencing us.
And I guess you could say, in a way, it comes from ballast. We have some of our biggest problems in the last 30 years have come because of ocean-going ships that dump their ballast into the Great Lakes.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. You know, a big source there of new non-native species to the Great Lakes that have really, really changed how the lakes work. Mm-hmm.
Wendy in Manitowoc wondered, she said a commercial fisherman told her the whitefish are changing body shape based on the change in their diet. I heard, are whitefish eating those quagga mussels?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, we definitely see, I look through a fair number of stomachs, and at least in the sort of Manitowoc Two Rivers area, we see a lot of stomachs full of those quagga mussels.
Yeah, well, maybe that's changing their body shape then.
Right. I mean, and nutritionally, what we see typically with invasive species, you know, they tend to be abundant, but not always nutritionally rich as some of the native food sources. So if we went back in time to sort of pre-zebra and quagga mussels, whitefish would have been eating benthic invertebrates called dipraia, and that was a really nutritious, energy-rich food source. And they've sort of replaced that with these quagga mussels, which are, you know, they're abundant, but you got to break that shell down, which I sort of describe it as, you know, you can live on a diet of just Twinkies, but maybe it's not as healthy as a really balanced meal.
Gotcha. Do you talk about these kinds of things, Anne, when you give your talks and get out?
Yeah, usually we don't quite get to that detail. In terms of fisheries, I've been traveling around the state with a sturgeon, actually, you know, to our caller's question before. I have about an 8-month-old specimen that I carry around in a jar. And, you know, fish and fisheries is definitely something people in Wisconsin have a strong passion for. And it's a really great way to kind of get people thinking about the Great Lakes. And it's a good, you know, all these fish tales and the connection that families have to fishing. And
And, well, before I forget about it, too, you've got a program on the Great Lakes tonight.
Yes, I do. So I'm going to be at the Ashman branch of the Madison Public Library. A lot of the local libraries, in conjunction with Go Big Read, are doing a lot of programming. So I'm going to kind of do an introduction of some of the stuff we're talking about today about the Great Lakes. And I draw on all the specialists that work for Sea Grant and, you know, get their advice on what really they're facing as challenges. And I did want to kind of do a shout out for a Sea Grant funded education project that is also as part of this evening's event. Sea Grant funds some young photographers that are in Northwest Passage. It's a residential treatment center. The kids go up to Lake Superior Basin and go diving, and they take photography. They're beautiful, beautiful works of art, and the kids have had a lot of healing as a result of that. So that'll be part of the event tonight as well.
I think it's called Under the Surface.
Exactly.
Yeah. The exhibit on display in the library. So, well, that's going to be cool. You said 6:30?
6:30 to 7:30.
In the Ashman branch of the Madison.
Right, and that's on the far west side of Madison on High Point Road.
So are you guys optimists or pessimists when it comes to the Great Lakes? Titus, are you?
You know, the lakes are here. I think I'm going to be optimistic. I want to be optimistic, and I think it's managing for the best that we can with what we have.
And I think, you know, just the thinking about those darn quagga mussels again, just the fact that whitefish have adapted to eat them. There are probably other fish out there that are hopefully doing the same thing.
Yeah, I think sometimes we're just not very patient. If we give it 20 or 100 years, you know, it'll work itself out.
I got here's a caller called in with a little trivia. If you took the top inch of water off all the Great Lakes, you'd end up with 552 billion gallons of water.
Yeah, how do you put your head around that? That's a lot of water.
Put your head around that, folks. Oh, my goodness me. Well, obviously, we had a lot more we could have talked about, and our lines are almost all full. But here we are out of time once again. So I'll just have to say you'll have to come back and be with us again, and we can do this again. Love to have you back and
definitely.
Do it.
It would be our pleasure.
Anne Mosier, she's talking tonight at the Ashman branch of the Madison Public Library at 6:30 about the Great Lakes, and then you'll get to see that wonderful photography exhibit. And if you go to the Sea Grant, if you just type in Wisconsin Sea Grant Program into your search engine, you're going to see all the stuff, lots of cool stuff on that site. And thanks to Titus Sauelheimer as well, Fisheries Outreach Specialist with the Wisconsin Sea Grant Program, and he's based at UW Green Bay Manitowoc Campus. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you, Larry.
And thank you for listening in. There's always lots of things going on here on the Ideas Network, and I hope you'll stay with us because, heck, there's a whole lot more in store all afternoon. Stay with us.